planet's puppet masters almost surely have a plan. There's clearly maybe something there beyond the realm of man. And until you've thoroughly tested every last close-chested view, I find the more you think you know, the less you really do.
That's true, Dr. Zaius.
Where would we be without THC? Cause we know they're lying to us, just don't know.
Alright folks, we know deception runs deep and we try to hold all our accepted truths up to the light and make sure they check out, but the most far out idea, the most polarizing possibility that we've ever really tackled here has got to be the Flat Earth episode with Eric Dubay. Since that show, I've had many people write me to say that they've stopped listening after wasting their time with such a ridiculous concept. I've had Plus members cancel because that episode changed their life for the better and it's become their sole topic of interest. And I've lost potential guests because they couldn't be associated with a show that would even discuss such a thing. So I figured why not make more trouble for myself and do it again because Marty Leeds, another previous THC guest, one of the few that I'd call a friend now, and a researcher I really respect, set off to disprove that ludicrous flat earth fallacy and found that he really couldn't. It's since become a bigger part of his paradigm, his spiritual journey, and the amazing stuff you can find on his website at MartyLeeds33.com, along with the four books he's written and his kick-ass music. Ladies and gentlemen, my go-to gematria guru, effervescent and always pleasant, Marty, my man, welcome back to the Higher Side.
Hey, thanks, man.
Yeah, pleasure to have you. It's awesome.
Always love the intros, dude.
Well, I try. You got to put a little effort into it, I feel.
Of course.
But I consider you a smart, science-minded guy. You've done great stuff with gematria and your English language cipher, as well as Pi and the sequential codes in nature. And it was really a big surprise to me to see you put out Flat Earth, the Ultimate Litmus Test, which was a really good video. And because I do know you a little bit, I have a real interest in that journey, that conversion process. Maybe you could walk us through that a little bit. You had to find it ridiculous at first, right?
I think most people do. I mean, because we've been told since our kindergarten or whatever that, I mean, this is an absolute fact. The Earth is a sphere. The sun is, you know, it's a heliocentric system, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that most people have that initial reaction that it's like, oh, okay, well, this is garbage. What the hell is this? This is the dumbest conspiracy I've ever heard. Mm-hmm. And so I had that reaction as well, but it was very short lived. And the reason it was short lived is because I'd done a lot of, for years, studied a lot of other cultures, like comparative mythology, sort of like syncretic study, that sort of thing. And I knew right away that there was all of these other cultures throughout history that absolutely 100% claimed that the Earth was flat, you know, mm-hmm. and even the themes and of how they explain the Earth were very similar. A lot of times it was sitting in water. There was four pillars that were holding up. There was a dome firmament, that sort of thing, and that the land was flat. So yeah, that initial reaction was like, yeah, that this is a joke. And I actually set out, like most people, I set out to say, oh, okay, well, I'm just going to debunk this or whatever. And mm-hmm. then after, it didn't take long, like I said, maybe a day or two, and I was head first into exploring this. And that's led up to talking to me to you. Or I mean, talking to you today.
Yeah, right on, man. For sure. It's funny because neither one of us has a problem discussing it, regardless of how far we go with it. But it is such a polarizing topic. What are your thoughts on how it's been received? Because just the aggressive emotional response it tends to stir up seems to have been a big part of your commentary on it up to this point, at least. What about that aspect would you say is worth mentioning?
Well, I mean, it is a polarizing subject because you're asking, I mean, it's the one, it's a trigger. It's the subject itself is a trigger subject. It's because it's such an easy thing to start a conversation with. Hey, I think the Earth is flat. Well, immediately people, it's not like when I said in that video, like when I start talking to people about sacred geometry, gematria, numerology, religions and their ties to mathematics and secret societies and their ties to language and mathematics. All of these subjects people don't really have a grip on or a grasp of, really. And so it's really easy for somebody to just dismiss that and not even pay any attention. But when you go to somebody and say, hey, I believe that the Earth is flat or this is something I'm considering, immediately that can get their attention because it's something that they've known their whole life. They've been told 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. Everybody thought it was flat. He proved it was round. And so what's this thing that gets people's attention right away? So it is a polarizing subject in that respect because it was made to be polarizing. Our quote unquote mm-hmm. educational indoctrination curriculum has made it polarizing.
It really has. And you mentioned the cultures. Maybe you can elaborate on that a little bit, because a lot of ancient cultures that we oftentimes in the alternative community put up on a pedestal for one reason or another, their architecture or their measurements and calendars, a lot of them believed the earth was flat. And when we're busy saying how advanced and sometimes superior they were, we do ignore that fact. I obviously see the argument that we just give them a pass because they didn't have modern telescopes or technology, but it doesn't change what they thought. And if I'm going to be fair about it, and if it's a deception, it hasn't been that long, because as a people, we've thought the earth was flat far longer than we believed it was round, right?
Yeah, much, much longer. This is one that I actually had, knowing for a long time, knowing that a lot of these cultures thought it was flat, I had a hard time. For instance, the Egyptians absolutely believed, as far as I've read and knew this for a long time, that the earth was flat. It was held up, that the vault of the sky was held up by four like mountains or pillars or whatever, that sort of thing. But they mm-hmm. thought the earth was flat. And so I've talked about how the Great Pyramid of Giza is a one scale model of the hemisphere of the earth. And so it's like, well, how can you reconcile those things?
Right.
If you say that the Great Pyramid of Giza is one scale model of the earth, and this doesn't come from me. This comes from other researchers, guys like Randall Carlson and John Michel and Scott Onstad and cats like this. When you talk about that, it's like, well, how can you say that if they actually thought the earth was flat? So obviously, whatever the Great Pyramid of Giza is, the measurements of it are not of a hemisphere of the earth. So what are they of? So the Egyptians thought the earth was flat. The Hindus absolutely thought the earth was flat. The Mayans absolutely thought the earth was flat. Numerous historians and researchers would tell you that. Many of the native cultures in the Americas firmly believed that the earth was a flat land mass, immovable. Mm-hmm. So we have to look at all these cultures, and at least for me, if I'd given them the respect of looking at their histories, their mythologies, their rituals, some of the gods that they've passed on, that sort of thing, well, then I have to give credence to this as well, right?
I think so. Now, you know, being a convert, you're talking to a lot of people who probably aren't, but what do you find to be some of the most convincing evidence of it? What were the things that really got you?
Well, let me say this too. I'm not necessarily a convert in one way. I will say this though, that, and this is something I mentioned in the video, is that I can no longer argue for the heliocentric system. That mm-hmm. there are, if, you know, you go A, B, you know, if you look at the heliocentric and you look at a geocentric system, and then you say, well, prove the heliocentric system. I can't anymore. There's nothing there's literally the amount of anomalies and paradoxes and things like that in the heliocentric system trump the ones in a geocentric system. There are still a ton of questions that I have surrounding flat Earth and the mechanics of it. Is it completely flat? Is it a dome? Is it infinite plane? How do, you know, certain mechanics work? These sorts of things. So I'm just more open to the discussion now. But I will say this, that as far as I can tell from my own terrestrial scientific investigation, you know, of this Earth, that it does appear absolutely flat. Everything that I've seen, though I've only seen a small chunk of this plane or planet or whatever the hell you want to call it, from what I gather, it is flat and not, or if it is, you know, spherical, it's a much bigger sphere than they've been telling us. So either way, I'm open to the discussion. And I know this for sure, that the people in power that have indoctrinated us and things like that are absolutely hiding things. I mean, I make the analogy to 9/11. I don't know what happened on 9/11, but I know for sure that what the government told us is incorrect. You know, yeah. So I say the same thing with the flat Earth, and I try to bring some reason to that discussion and not just be like, well, it's flat, fuck you, this is how it is, you know, because that just doesn't do any good, in my opinion.
Right. And that's needed, because people are very aggressive on this topic, but that is fair. I definitely don't want to label you something you aren't. I would say I'm right there with you. I'm kind of earth shape agnostic at this point, which is really going pretty far already. You know, I wouldn't have thought that a year ago I would even be saying something like that. But when it comes to the evidence, one thing that I have seen is that being right here on the coast, people always talk about, oh, well, when a ship goes out and it disappears, it's because it goes below the horizon. Well, I have seen that when it goes out of your view, you can take a camera with a good zoom, zoom in and see that ship again. So I don't know. That's one of the things that got me. The other one that's in your video is when you take a camera in a balloon and you send it up there and you see the sun over the ocean and there's that big hot spot. And we're told that it's 93 million miles away, but it's putting a spot right below it like a light bulb. What if it was that close? I don't know. Yeah, that's the kind of things that have me stuck in the gray.
Yeah, and it's okay to question these things. That's the other thing I brought up in the video is like, is there anything wrong with fundamentally questioning things that we've been told, whatever that is? I mean, I've done this for a long time with mathematics and language and the religions, where it's like I just went head on and questioned everything that they were saying. And I came to my own conclusions. And I think the conclusions, at least for me personally, that I've come to have been extremely illuminating and have changed my life in ways I would have never thought possible. So it's almost like this rebellious, autodidactic sort of way of looking at these things. Well, what's so wrong with doing that with the shape of the Earth? There were certain things that, yeah, like once I grasped how, especially since there was a model, there wouldn't have been a model to go to and actually say, hey, well, this is what the in general, how the sun works and how the moon works in a flat plane. You know, we have a history of these things. If I wouldn't have had that, then it might be a difficult thing to try to tackle. But since there was that, I could actually look and, okay, what am I seeing here? Is this the sun coming at me and, you know, turning in a, around a central pole? And is it coming at me at, you know, according to the laws of perspective? Or is that, or am I spinning on a ball 1,000 miles an hour and that thing's 93 million miles away? Well, when it comes to terrestrial science, things that you can actually verify yourself, I couldn't verify anything in the heliocentric model. So yeah, I mean, it's things like that, that I think people that come to this subject and they start asking those questions, a lot of them, like I said, a lot of people wanted to debunk it and they end up coming to the same conclusions as well. This makes a lot of sense. And it's things I can verify, which is what science is supposed to be. Verifiability, repeatability, experiments, investigations, research, and verify that stuff. And of course, this is honestly what we're doing.
Well said. Absolutely. And I am very much willing to have the conversation too. And I can't commit, but the common ground that I enjoy most with flat earth folks is the distrust for the various bricks in the power pyramid, and especially dismantling the lies of NASA. That to me is the most fun thing about it, you know, more so than the actual shape of the Earth. But this was a big part of the process for you too, right? I mean, you've looked hard at NASA and you see it full of holes like Swiss cheese, right?
Yeah. And that was so quick too. I mean, the thing about NASA is I never really paid attention to it that much because it was just another government organization. I just assumed that just like every other government organization, that 10% of what they were doing might be have some legitimacy and 90% of it was all bullshit. You know, like I never thought we went to the moon. I never believed that there was a rover on Mars. You know, did I consider that there was some sort of telescope or something like a Hubble up there? Yeah, possibly. But I thought it was just another, you know, to be honest, just another place where they could funnel money into doing whatever nefarious and evil shit that they do. You know, but it turns out, no, they were actually using it as a branch of the military to, as, you know, a tool of propaganda, mass propaganda. And that's exactly what it is. So NASA, it didn't take long. All you have to do is investigate it for a few days and you can see innumerable problems with the things that they're presenting to us and how no one can verify any of it. You have to trust them. And of course, as we know, as probably every guest you've ever had on says, well, you can't trust the government, right? I mean, what's the age old adage that, you know, your parents told you, you know, there's two people that you can't trust, lawyers and politicians. Isn't it funny that most politicians are lawyers?
Good point. And for the people who maybe haven't seen your video, we've talked about a lot of problems with the things NASA puts out, but the Hubble, what is it about the Hubble that now has you doubting that it exists? Because that might be one of the most accepted things that NASA's done so far.
Well, I mean, just the whole space in and of itself, verifying any of that is, you know, substantiating anything they're saying there, the existence of gravity. I mean, okay, here's one that I find that's so interesting. Like, I mean, the International Space Station is supposedly, what, 250, 300 miles up there. It's traveling at 17,500 miles an hour in the thermosphere that gets up to several thousand degrees Fahrenheit or Celsius. Doesn't even matter at that point. It gets really effing hot up there. This is consider that as like one of the greatest engineering feats man has ever done, to be able to go and piece by piece put that thing together and then make it run. Why don't we have any footage of that? Why is there not a documentary on that? Why shouldn't it, like, when that whole thing was happening, when it was, I'm guessing, what, mid-90s, early-90s? I don't even know the history of it. But why don't we why wasn't there a feed showing these guys putting this stuff together at 17,500 miles an hour? It's things like that that there's just nothing, just hardly anything to prove that that thing is even up there. So,
right.
You know, we look at that, like, okay, explain to me how any sort of metals even exist up there, let alone how does it handle traveling 17,500 miles an hour.
Never hits any debris, never hits a satellite.
I mean, and I'm really, what I did with the movie was try to sum up the discussion as best as I could. That's really what I wanted to do. That was the impetus behind the movie, was to like bring the discussion and bring some balance to it, not tell you how it is and just lay out, hey, why are people thinking this? Why are people looking into this? And that, I mean, the thing about what I came to is that you can't verify any of this stuff. You just can't. So what does that say? What does that say about science in general? Are these erudite NASA scientific priests, are we just supposed to prostrate to them or what?
Right. And another couple of good points you make about NASA in conventional American politics, whether you're on the left or the right, there's always someone who's critical of an organization and the other side is in support. But when it comes to NASA, it's everyone across the board, unwavering religious acceptance of everything they say and do. And that's a bit of a red flag, as well as the moon landing, the whole moon landing thing, which I think has been thoroughly shown to be stagecraft, was only 11 years after NASA was funded. And if they're willing to do something that's that elaborate of a forgery, just 11 years into their existence, I mean, what does that say about the organization as a whole?
I mean, I think it says everything that needs to be said, right? I mean, what more do you want to say? It's once again, the government screwing the people. And one thing I didn't really bring up, which the other work that I do like covers, but one thing I try to like repeat is that our world is run by occultists, man. These are occultists. Yeah. These are people who are masters of language and symbol and numbers and reality and science, and they know how to manipulate it. I mean, I've been saying this with the language for a long time. I've been saying this about the religions for a long time. I've been saying this about the math for a long time. And so when we see this happening with NASA, it's just, yeah, of course. When we, the other thing about, you know, these dark occultists, you have to understand, this is something I repeat all the time too, is that the occult isn't necessarily evil. You have evil occultists in charge, yeah, but the same information that they're using to manipulate you is the same information that's going to free you.
Yeah.
It's, you know, that's, I think there's just a truth there. I just posted this thing a couple days ago. It was just a quote that I had came up with, and it said, you know, go young seeker, go dig down deep through our occulted world, go mining and spelunking into what has been hidden. But know this, the further you go into the darkness, the more light you're going to need. The same place where you go to find how evil and terrible these people are is the same place you're going to find the snake that bit you. Is that's where you're going to find the antivenom. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Poetic, man. And I also know that you're a fan of many of the great thinkers of the past. I mean, how has this affected the way you view guys like Copernicus or Pythagoras or Galileo?
Well, I mean, I've never really been like that big of a fan of these guys. You know what I mean? As far as like, I mean, it's like just because you point out somebody has, you know, has done some things in the past or whatever, but it's not like I was, you know, Galileo was a hero of mine like it was for maybe like Stephen Hawking or something like that.
Fair.
The other thing about when you say like I've used the quote, all is number, Pythagoras said, right? Well, people have said like Pythagoras was like a sphere Earth or whatever. Just so you know, Pythagoras probably didn't even exist. In fact, I did a whole broadcast, not a whole broadcast, but a good portion of a broadcast on 42 minutes over at the Sync Book talking to Douglas Bowles about how he was actually quoting from this other book about how Pythagoras was probably more like a mythological character, that there was just a group of people that created this sort of like whatever you want to call enlightened human being, and that this was a Pythagoras. And so when we say, ah, oh, Pythagoras, he was a heliocentrist, whatever, dude, you don't even know if that guy existed. It's like when people argue about Jesus's birthday. It's like, well, no, it was on September 11th, man. It's like, dude, we don't even know if that guy lived. So are you really going to have some grand argument over these things, or are we just going to, take what we know and try to find the truth as best as we can? So, it's not like I've looked back and been like, oh, I was following the wrong people or anything. Cause I was following what was in my heart, following truth. So period.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. But it just has me curious, because I think if the flat Earth model is the correct model, and we've been tricked into a Big Bang, heliocentric, randomized universe type of model, it just makes me wonder, are these people deceivers? You know, like I've kind of wanted to deconstruct the globe model's implementation and rise and kind of see, because I think there might be clues there into not only is it really a manipulation, and obviously who would be behind it? How did it get implemented? So those are kind of curious things to me. I don't know how much you've dug into that aspect of it.
Well, this is the problem I have with history, is that we know history is made by the winners, for lack of a better term, that history is full of lies. It's constantly full of lies. It's constantly being manipulated. It's constantly being distorted. I mean, whatever you think about, like Copernicus or whatever, that book was released on his deathbed. So who the fuck's to say that guy even wrote that? Do you know what I'm saying? Henry Cavendish. Right? I talked about Henry Cavendish, who's the guy that supposedly created or found the gravitational constant, Big G. Well, supposedly his manuscripts and stuff weren't even found till he was dead.
Right.
So who's to say that's like, oh, Copernicus and Cavendish were part of some grand conspiracy, or they were just tools. They were just tools. They were, what do they call them? Useful idiots, or whatever you want to say. That there was somebody that wanted to manipulate history, and evil dark occultists came along and said, nah, we'll distort this. So, I mean, how much of that has happened in our history? Most of it. We could say that most of our history is like that. And so since we don't have an objective record of history, it's really hard for us to comb back through 500 years, 1,000 years and say, well, this is exactly what happened. We can't trust this character because history told us this. Well, that's a dangerous road to go down.
It is. It is. Yeah. And that Copernicus anecdote is interesting, and it parallels something we've talked about recently with Stephen Hawking, the dark possibility that he's not saying what his computer says he's saying, and that, everybody stands up and claps when he comes in the room, and he's the champion of the entire scientific model. Basically, everything that comes out of his mind is basically what science thinks, and there's no guarantee that he's saying that.
Yeah. I mean, and
dark, but
yeah, but at the same time, would you put it past a psychopath to do that?
Right. And how convenient that the leading scientific mind can't actually speak his own real words.
Yeah, he can't speak. He can't write. I mean, I'm not saying this or whatever, but is it a possibility? Yes. Some people, it's interesting, even people that listen to a show like this would be like, oh, this is ridiculous. Fuck Greg. Fuck Marty. whatever. And it's amazing how many people will not even consider things like this. Like this was several years back. This is kind of off topic, but it's kind of an analogy that I have a friend he's a really smart dude. He's pretty open-minded and stuff like that. And I had showed him Barack Obama's birth certificate. My friend Dylan, this is 6-7 years back, whatever it was. He sent me this thing. He's like, dude, you got to go and check out Barack Obama's birth certificate. It's online at the government.org, .gov. Go check it out. So I downloaded the thing, and I don't give a shit where he's born. I have no stake in that. Who cares? I don't care at all. I'm not part of that conversation whatsoever, but it interested me. So I downloaded the thing, opened it up, and the thing is in layers. Which, if you know the Adobe suite and when he was born, is impossible. It's just impossible. So not only is the thing in layers, but you can actually go and see where the government or whoever it was manipulated the document. Mm-hmm. So I don't care where he's born. I have no stake. This isn't a Democrat, Republican thing. I just don't give a shit. But I went to go tell my friend. I'm like, look, man, I work on the Adobe suite. I've been doing this stuff my whole life. I can tell you 100% that this document, whatever, wherever he was born, whatever, is a fake. And I told him this and he just would not have it. I could have shown him proof after proof after proof, and it does not matter. It didn't matter to him because he had already had it in his mind that that's ridiculous. Well, welcome to Flat Earth. It's the same thing. People have it in their mind that this is ridiculous. Shut up. I'm not listening to this. So it doesn't matter. You can show them proofs. You can show, hey, man, I've seen something that's 30 miles off the coast that's supposed to be over the sphere. I can show them that, hey, there's no way that we can even prove that the sun is 93 million miles away or that the moon is a reflective light. Blah, 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 blah. You can go down that. And a lot of times it just doesn't matter because people, they've already formed their opinions and they've based their entire image of themselves on those things. And so to destroy them is to ask them to go through that process of really enlightenment, which is a destructive process. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I know that as soon as you put that video out, it's got to be all anybody wants to talk to you about. It's just, you know, I know how these things are. I know how the flat earth is. But, you know, your work about gematria has also advanced a lot lately. And I want to make sure we talk about that too. So just to segue into it, has this seemingly unrelated work helped to shed light on NASA or the flat earth in any way, this gematria work?
Yeah, actually, what I plan to do, I'm going to 4-10s at work, and I'm going to finish my book in the next couple months. And then after that, I'm going to do a web series, lecture series, where I'm actually going to stand up in front of people and do like 40 minutes or whatever of a lecture series. And the first two that I've already sort of sketched out is, you know, I'm going to go over the cipher and then actually show this, how it's expressed in the UN logo, which is a supposedly, well, it's the azimuthal equidistant projection, but what many people are claiming could be a variation anyway of a flat earth map. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to show how the mathematics of the English alphabet are encoded in that. And so that's going to be the first video. And then the second one, I'm going to do a little bit on the International Space Station directly, because there's a ton of esoteric shit in that that is just pretty amazing. But it's going to be a while before I do it just because I'm a busy guy. But so there has been a lot of things that have, you know, that have come out with the work that I'm engaged in. So, and it's pretty interesting, man, you know, but the other thing too, though, is that as much as I feel like this is a gravely important discussion to have, I also don't think it's the only discussion to have. And in the next book that I'm putting out, there's nothing flat earth in it at all, because, I'd already had the book sketched out and there's no need to it, because there's all these other things that I want to discuss that to me are as infinitely important as this discussion.
So. Yeah, man. And one, connection I did see you make between gematria, the cipher for the English language, and some of this stuff with NASA is numerically, I guess the degrees of the Freemasonic square and compass would be 47 for the compass and 90 for the square, which equals 137, which is the same as the numerical value of National Aeronautics Space Administration when you lay it onto your cipher. I mean, that's pretty impressive, right?
Just a coincidence, man. No, I mean, that shows you that how occultists are running our world, man. So what you were saying is on the cover of the Masonic Bible I have, which is just a King James Bible. It was just made by the Masons, you know, so it's the same King James Bible that anybody gets, but they put some more stuff in the beginning and the end. And there's this the Freemason symbol on the cover of it. Well, the compass is open to 47 degrees. Well, the degrees between Tropic of Cancer and Tropic of Capricorn, no matter what model you look at, are at 47 degrees. So here you have the path of the sun in the Tropic of Cancer and Tropic of Capricorn in the degrees of the compass right on the cover there. And then, of course, like as you were saying, you have the 90, and, you know, 90 plus 47 is 137. And yes, National Aeronautics and Space Administration equals 137 in the cipher. 137 is the 33rd prime number. So 137, 137.5, this is the degree of phylotaxis. It's the degree in which plants will arrange their leaves around the central stalk in order to receive the optimal light and rain and that sort of thing. So here you have a singular number pointing to the number 33 and pointing to fundamental architecture within our creation. And it's all in a symbol. And so this is the level of information that these dark occultists are hiding from you. And if you've seen any of the videos that I do and read any of the books and things like that, the and this is actually, I'm speaking at the Lightning in a Bottle Festival this weekend, this upcoming weekend in California. And this is actually what I'm going to be covering, is that one of the things, the main thing that these dark occultists are hiding from you is the nature of your own divinity, is how to understand it, how to verify it, math with the precision and exactitude of mathematics. And this is the thing that they're ultimately hiding from you.
Right. I've heard you put it brilliantly, because people ask, why would they hide the composition of the earth? Well, when you get into the flat earth and its implications, its religious and spiritual implications for a creator, I don't like those kind of questions in that area. I'm not comfortable there. But you can't deny that it brings in all these other questions. And why would they do this? Well, as you've put it, they're playing God. They're literally replacing God.
Yes, that's what they're doing. I mean, that's exactly what they're doing. The thing is, except their God isn't the God of the great spiritual essence, you know, the creator of the whole thing. Their God is themselves. You know what I mean? That they're going to watch out for their bloodline and their family, and they want to control the world, because if they control the world, they get to play God, which means they do what they want. They control the money system. I mean, we've had a conversation before. It was like, what would be the end goal of the elite? Money? Well, no, they print all the money.
Yeah, they make it.
They make it. So it's obviously not money. So, right. And then you say, well, it's power. Well, why? Well, they're just drunk on power. No, because their power is a power of epic proportions. Mm-hmm. And so once again, that's a realization that people need to come to. And you're really only going to come to if you study the occult or the deep esoteric, is to realize that the greatest of lights has that shadow. And we're looking at that shadow right now. And unfortunately, that shadow is in control.
Right. Whether or not you put stock in the flat earth model, the materialist paradigm itself does the same thing, right? I mean, they took the world from a place where many cultures had a connection to nature, to the spirit world and consciousness, and yes, a creator, if we want to throw that in too. And despite the composition of the earth, they've gone to some extreme lengths to pull us away from that mindset. It's just, how bold do you think that lie was? At what stop do you want to get off the train? But broadly speaking, I think a lot of us are in agreement about recognizing that manipulated shift in human understanding.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. At this point, it's just like, whether flat earth or not flat earth, that this is what they're doing anyway. I mean, this is something, once again, that I'd come to long before I'd ever even heard of flat earth. You know, it's like, I completely understood that this is what these people were doing, that they were controlling humanity to play God with you, to control your life, to control your children, your children's children's children, to dumb you down, to manipulate you, to indoctrinate you, to propagandize you. And they're going to use every tool in their chest. And what is that? It's the money system. It's the media. It's the language. It's the symbols. It's the religions. It's the science, everything. And that's a dark thing to talk about. One of the reasons I don't talk about a lot of this stuff or harp on it is because, well, I mean, just, you know, go perusing through YouTube and you can find 1,000, 10,000 different channels that are going to be talking about the dark side of this stuff. And here I am, Marty Leeds 33, over in my dusty corner of the internet, showing the light that these people have taken, you know, and looking at the body of knowledge and saying, no, mankind, what? There is a creator. You can come to understand the creator. It interpenetrates and interweaves through every single bit of us, every single aspect of this creation. And we can take the knowledge back. Because if you understand what they're doing and you understand the knowledge of the divine, how that can be understood through geometry and even our language and the numbers and the symbols and things like that, you can take this back and then they can't use it against you. You know, I'm like, I've made my peace with the earth, which isn't to say I want to get out of here or anything like that, but I'm not scared of these people at all. I'm not scared of what they do, because I've made peace with myself and the people around me and the creation itself, because I've come to understand this stuff intrinsically, intuitively. And so that's, I don't know, that's just kind of where I'm at. And that's why I do what I do.
For sure, man. And you mentioned that you're putting together something on the ISS. I know it's probably not totally fleshed out yet, but can you give us a little taste? Because the ISS is one of those things that has me a little bit confused, because I've seen the fake videos. I've seen plenty of NASA footage. They say it's people on the ISS, but yet their hair moves as if it's propped up with hairspray. You can see wires. There's all kinds of inconsistencies in the video. But then, you know, you go on NASA's website and they tell you where the ISS is supposed to be flying over. And I've gone out into the street in front of my house. Of course, it's just a little dot, but you do see something move across the sky in the exact place where they say it's going to be. And I've heard people say that if you have the ham radios or whatever, you can sometimes catch a signal from it if it's flying overhead. But I mean, what can you say about the ISS? Because it is one of those things that's got me right in the middle.
Well, a lot of the things that I'm going to cover with the ISS are in the esoteric realm. I'm looking at the numbers letter associated with the ISS, what ISS stands for, what they're, you know, taking a look at their logo and that sort of thing. So that's some of the stuff I'm going to cover. As far as like substantiating the ISS, I mean, there's been people that have said, yeah, I can see it. Look, I mean, all I have to do is look up in the sky and I can take a telescope and I can see an image of the ISS as it's flying across. Yeah, well, in Japan, they have an image of somebody singing on stage and they get 40,000 people to go and it's a hologram. Yeah. You know, when people, you have to realize that this is well known, even in, not even in conspiracy circles or whatever, that the R&D, you know, the research and development of the government is 20 to 25 years, if not more, beyond what we get at Best Buy, and probably more than that. So the idea that when you look at Project Bluebeam and stuff like that, that they couldn't fabricate this, what would be easier? To flash something on a dome, a hologram up there to convince people that they made this International Space Station, or construct the International Space Station from, you know, from spaceships at 17,500 miles an hour? What do you think's easier? What do we have the technology to actually do right now? Well, we know we have the technology to blast a hologram up there. We know we have that. Can we right now? Can we send people up in a spaceship, even if it was just a few miles up in the air, and create something like the International Space Station? You know, as we're flying through, you know, just regular jets.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just be reasonable. So, you know, you ask questions like that and then you say, no, I don't know what's going on with the International Space Station. Do I believe it's up there? I have no evidence to say it is whatsoever. And the people, give a little shout out to Jaronism here. I don't know if you know Jaron Campanella. He's got a whole channel, called Jaronism, and he's spent a lot of time deconstructing the International Space Station. He's got video upon video of it. And, you know, you spend an hour or two, smoke a J, sit down with Jaronism for a few hours, and you're going to see how much bullshit it is. That's just where I'm at right now. Once again, you know what? I'm not the kind of guy that's trying to convince you of anything. I'm just saying, as for me going into this discussion, when I started to do the video, I didn't have any stake in the matter. I didn't care whether the Earth was round or flat. I went in and I was like, okay, I'm going to perform a scientific experiment on this subject and on myself. What am I willing to consider? That sort of thing. And what can I prove? And the International Space Station was one of them that just had red flags all day long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And obviously, I know you're not trying to be a champion for this. I don't want to hit you with too many of these flat Earth questions, but on the subject of projecting something onto a supposed dome, I mean, what do you think about space? Because, I mean, just like some people say they can see the ISS, you can look in a telescope and see planets shaped like they say they're supposed to be shaped. I guess you can see rings around Saturn and that kind of thing. What do you think people are seeing when they're looking at a telescope like that? More projections?
Well, I mean, the idea that people have said, well, the moon is a hologram and things like that, and it's created by the U.S. government.
Don't I know it?
Yeah, right. and whatever. I mean, talk about that. Consider it. Obviously, throw it on the table for consideration. Otherwise, you're not really doing science. One thing I always went back to was the traditions, though. What did the people of the past have to say about? And as far as I know, the stars have always hung like lamps in the heavens. The moon and sun have been there for a very, very long time. And they were not fabrications made by man. One thing I think that's happened and how I understand it, because the things that I discuss are more theologically based, how I've come to understand it is what these evil dark occultists, you want to call them demonic, you want to call them Satanists, whatever you want to call them. One thing that they've done is, like I said, they're playing God. They've taken the spiritual realms, the things up in the heavens, and made them material. They've objectified them. So how many people of the past have actually gone up and touched the surface of the moon? Well, I don't really know for a fact, but I can pretty much say that nobody There's nobody that's ever been up to the moon, if you can even touch the moon, if it is even terra firma or whatever. So what is the moon and sun to you ultimately? Well, it's a spiritual, subjective thing. It's like that Robert Anton Wilson thing where I think he was talking about William Blake and somebody said, oh, what's the sun? Well, it's just a big burning ball of gas. And then William Blake's like, no, it's a thousand choir. It's a thousand angels, you know, an angelic choir singing me songs of the heavens. What is that subjectively to you? What does the sun subjectively mean to you? What does the moon subjectively mean to you? What does it mean that no matter what the model is, that the sun and the moon and the stars appear to revolve around you? What does that mean? We talk about the, like, what is the moon? Is it round? Is it flat? Is it concave? Is it convex? Blah, 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 blah. But then do we ever ask, well, what does the moon mean to us? And in the video, I said, the sun and the moon to me are declarations of cosmic grace. And that's exactly what they are. The sun is that chronicler. It's the tempo and rate and rhythm of time. It's what creates day and night, you know? So what does the sun? It brings me the light and it brings me the darkness. What is the moon to me? Well, this is something I'm actually going to talk about in this next lecture I'm doing, but it's interesting that women's menstrual cycles are tied to the moon. And the moon is, pretty much been clocked as a 28 day period. And of course, women's menstrual cycles are every 28 days. Well, you find the number 28 right in your two hands. And it's also interesting that when her egg drops during ovulation, it's actually at the 14th day. So you have 14 phalanges on your left hand and you have 14 on your right. So here it is, the month or the month or the moon and the 28 day cycle of the moon not only is tied to menstruation, which means that it's tied to every single human being that's been born on the planet. The time of ovulation when a woman is most fertile is right between your hands. So how many people know this? How many people have never considered this? And then how many people take that information and then say, well, what is the moon? Well, the moon is, once again, it's an example of a cosmic grace. It's that object or subject or whatever you want to call it that's in the heavens that allows us to understand as above, so below. That allows us to tie ourselves to the heavens and the cycles of heavens. And that's what spiritual means. Spiritual means spiral ritual. That's where the word comes from. So when you talk about, am I a spiritual person, man? Well, how connected to you are you to these things? Because you can be very connected to them, in my opinion.
Yeah. Interesting, man. Another thing I got from your video that I think would shock a lot of people who might be kind of rolling their eyes at Flat Earth Talk, we talked about old cultures that people respect their esoteric knowledge but ignore the Flat Earth component of. You have a quote from Nikola Tesla that surprised me, that he's talking about that the Earth is a realm, not a planet, and that the stars are attached to the firmament. I mean, who knew that?
Well, let me say this. I believe that quote, I attributed that quote incorrectly. But I'm glad you're bringing it up because other people have brought it up. And this is actually an important point when we talk about doing science. So I did that movie. It took me like, I don't know, 3.5 months just on my spare time. And I covered a lot of stuff. I was going through a ton of information at that point, not only the information, but writing it, editing it, things like that. So just like every other video I put out and every other book I put out and every other record I've put out, as soon as you do it, you look back and say, oh shit, I should have did that better. That was incorrect. That sort of thing. You always have the criticism. So I knew in this video that I was going to do that. And as soon as I put it out, there was things I was like, I could have done that better. I did that wrong, that sort of thing. So one of the things in that video was that quote that I had two sources of it. And one was actually cosmiccreations.com. And it turns out that that was incorrect. And so some people had jumped on it, right? And it was like, oh, you're a liar. You know, you're trying to deceive people and stuff like that. And it's like, no, man, I made a mistake, you know? And so what you're doing there is cherry picking out of a general trajectory of an idea, going to cherry pick something and then therefore using that as something to discredit or back up your beliefs. So to me, it's actually important that I left it in there. Number one, if it's incorrect, that everybody goes and says, look, Marty fucked up. Marty made a mistake. Go point that out and make sure everybody knows about it. But what you also have to do in the scientific method to uphold just, you know, civility in the scientific method is that when you point out things that are incorrect, you also have to point out the things that I got right, or the things that are legitimate things to discuss, legitimate arguments.
Yeah.
And we're not doing that in this community. It's not happening in academia. That's for sure. And I've said that with the, you know, the gematria numerology work that I've done. I've made mistakes in the past. And so somebody will go along and be like, oh, look, he made a mistake. He, you know, added a word wrong, or he got a historical context wrong. Therefore, we should just dismiss the entirety of his work. And that's asinine. Here's an analogy. Like, if you go and you, you know, you're in college or you're in university and you take a final exam on chemistry or anatomy or whatever it is, and you, there's 100 questions and you get 20 of them wrong. Well, you got 20 questions just wrong. You were wrong. Wrong, 100% wrong. You got them wrong. Mm-hmm. But you got 80 of them right, which means that you passed, right? Mm-hmm. But how many people in this community will go and look at the 20 things that somebody got wrong and then completely dismiss it? Yet in a university setting, that's a B. You know what I mean? So I know that everything that I've produced, everything, the videos, the books, this last video, there are things that are wrong. And so it's very important that people go and point those things out. But you also have to point out what you got right. It's important.
Yeah, it is. Fair. My bad, man.
No, it's not your bad. I'm actually glad we're talking about this because people have brought it up and it's an important point.
Yeah. So yeah, it is. I mean, you want to be accurate.
Yeah.
Okay. So to ask you the big icky question for me, I know it's something that's important to you and I think it jives with a lot of people who are listening and also people who are in the Flat Earth community. But how has this journey affected your thoughts about life and spirituality and a possible creator? Because this is your most recent presentation is pretty focused on this.
It hasn't. Okay. So for me, it really did not change too much because I had already come to the conclusion that man was central to the mystery. No matter if this was an illusion, a hologram, I had already come to this idea that somehow, no matter what was going on, that man and his consciousness was sort of central to the thing, and that a creator, this great spirit or grand architect or great geometer or whatever you want to call this thing, put mankind central to the mystery and actually put its consciousness through man. And so man was actually an experiencer of the God thing in and of itself. And so that sort of feedback loop, that sort of Mobius strip of consciousness or whatever you want to call it, is actually what's going on. So when the Flat Earth thing came up, not only was it in accord with a lot of what the ancient people had said, it was in accord with what I was already thinking. The only difference was it wasn't saying that, oh no, what we're saying is man is literally central to the entire universe, that literally the landmass that he is standing on and his, you know, the drama and experience of mankind is central to the whole thing. So I was already there, you know, in that respect. So it didn't really change much spiritually for me, but I know it has helped people spiritually. And there's been a lot of people that have been like, hey, you know, this has helped me understand a creator better. So that's good. I don't know if this is going to help or hurt what I'm doing. It doesn't really matter. I'm just going to keep on doing what I'm doing anyway. But it really hasn't changed my opinions towards a creator at all because I was, like I said, I was already there.
Fair. Yeah. Well, I like getting into the depth of some of the stuff you talked about in that latest presentation. You get into the idea that there is a cohesive message, parallel messages that come through not only nearly all religions, but also the teachings of the Kabbalah, the core beliefs of the main secret societies like Freemasons and the OTO. What is that central message to you? What is that core message about life, consciousness, our origins, that whole thing?
The central thing is that man is put on this earth to undergo a great journey, a great quest, that he is put on a path. And ultimately that path is to find something that was hidden within him. And that is the entire reason that the thing was created in and of itself, at least as far as the drama of man is concerned, that God lost itself in its own creation and that man is put through the test and trials to go through and find that thing. And ultimately that thing is, to put it simply and not to sound all new agey and shit, but love. One of the things that I talked about in that video, the Flat Earth video, was the weighing of the heart ceremony, that the crux of Egyptian philosophical thought was basically this idea that after you died, you're just like in a lot of other cultures, they talked about you'd have this sort of review of your life, right? That God would pop in the DVD and take a look at what you did. And then, you know, you'd have that review. And ultimately, if your heart was as light or as lighter than a feather, then you would go back and embrace with the oneness, the great undifferentiated light of the creator kind of thing. And so that to me is the central thing that's being hidden. And so when you look at the dark occultists of the world, the people that are manipulating our reality, they're trying to steer you away from that as any way that they can. And that's why you have so much of this appealing to man's lower natures, sex, eating, you know, fighting, fear, all of these sorts of things. These are the things that are like highlighted in our society because it steers you away from that path, which is a path of nobility. It's a path of a spiritual path of morality and ethics. Yeah. And how much care and compassion you have towards your fellow man, how much love you're bringing to the earth, how much you're inspiring people. And that is really what the work that I'm focused on is all about. What does Flat Earth and have to say about if you and I were standing next to each other right now, would it matter what the shape of the earth is?
No.
Would it flat around? Would it right? No. What would matter? We'd just, you know, we'd probably just say, hey, we're going to finish smoking this whole bag. And yeah. Then, you know, but what would matter? How are we following the golden rule? Are we being care, or, you know, do we care for one another? Are we being kind to one another? Are we choosing to coexist even though we have differences? These are the things that matter. And mm-hmm. So that I think is the great mystery and quest of the human being. And that's what's being hidden. Once again, that's just hiding the divine within. It's trying to divert you from that path of finding that.
Mm-hmm. Well said. And
I would say this is the other thing, that this isn't something that has to be hidden. In fact, I think cultures of the past actually taught this stuff to their children, that it was actually a process of growing up, was a process of like, you couldn't enter the tribe unless you were going to be a man, if you will. You were going to be an upstanding human being. You were going to live nobly and ethically and morally, and you were going to do what was best for the community. You know, these were the things, and these sorts of things were taught to children. Especially when you look at like native cultures, I think this is exactly what they were teaching.
Right. And apparently, you know, it's not really that hidden according to some of your presentations, if you look at mathematics and nature.
You know, one of the things I'm talking about in this lecture I'm doing, it's just like, thou shall reach true enlightenment when thou comes to know thy true shape of the earth, said no philosopher ever, right?
Yeah.
What did the philosopher say? What did the Delphic Oracle say? Oh man, know thyself and you shall know the universe and the gods. So these mysteries, all of these things that, you know, are hidden, they're right in front of us. Like I was just talking about with the phalanges of our hands, it's right there.
Mm-hmm.
Our connection to the moon and our connection to the man's, the cycle of man coming to the menstruation cycle and ovulation cycle. And, you know, all that stuff is connected to the sun, is connected to the moon. And all you have to do is a little math. And so all this stuff is right in front of us. And they've done everything in their power to keep us from this, to keep us from even understanding what's right in front of us.
Yeah.
It's secrets in plain sight.
Mm-hmm. And I see the motivations there. I really do. And I want to give people a little bit of context for your gematria work if they're not familiar. But to back it up a bit there, it seems like, to simplify some of it, when languages are formed, all the major ones tend to have a mathematical code to them. And the cipher, or the way to decode the message, tends to be in the core religious texts of that language. Is that basically it? Can that template be applied to most languages?
I honestly don't know. I don't have a direct answer for that. I do know that some of the major languages, without question, have a mathematical foundation. This is just, you know, I'd mentioned this. I did a couple podcasts back, and my friend gave me this book, and it's by this German linguist. And he's just a regular run-of-the-mill academia linguist. He's not an esotericist. He's not a conspiracy theorist. He's just a, you know, professor. And he wrote this book on number words and symbols and that sort of thing. And there's several pages in there where he goes and shows explicitly how Greek had a cipher, Hebrew has numbers attached to their languages. There's the Abjad and the Arabic. There's et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That all of these different languages absolutely had a mathematical cipher. Nothing controversial at all. So when you look at English and say, is there one for that? Well, that's the evidence that I'm trying to put forward is, and that, yes, they were encoding these things within, for instance, the Holy Bible. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's that particular one is something I've looked at because I know for a fact, or at least to the best of my knowledge, that it was encoded with this cipher, and there's just amazing things you can draw from it. And so, yeah, when you look at the Holy Bible, you're looking at a mathematical document. Mm-hmm. And what I'm trying to say is that you can prove that.
Yeah, I find that interesting because I'm not into the Bible as a literal thing, of course, but if we're talking about some people hiding a coded message in there that describes reality, I mean, that's something I can get into. Can you give us a couple of examples of of where you see that the most?
Well, yeah, there's honestly, it's one of those things, like, as soon as we go into any one of them, we could spend 2 hours talking about it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, that's why I have to do videos and books and stuff like that, because it's just, there's just so much you can extract. One thing I always like to bring up to people is how this is hidden, how this is occulted, and why it's so cryptic and why it's written so cryptic. Number one, the information has to be hidden in some way so that it will last throughout the ages. Well, I mean, the Bible, if anybody that picks up the Bible that has any sort of reason or rationale can tell you very clearly that it's highly symbolic, highly cryptic. And there's obviously, you know, where do you think the read between the lines comes from? You know, it comes from the Bible, you know. So the opening pages of the Bible, Genesis, you know, 1:1 to whatever it is, talks about how God created the universe in 7 days. Did some shit on the first day. That was good. Did some stuff the second day. It was good. Third day, blah, blah, blah. And then rested on the seventh day. Well, anybody with any sort of philosophy can, you know, or studies of theology can look at this and say, wait a second, God's all powerful. He's omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent. He can create universes upon universes upon universes in a split second. Why in the world would it take this grand architect, this great being, 7 days to create anything? It doesn't make any sense. That just fails logic 101. So then you have to say, well, what are they talking about then? Well, then you can actually go and find out that there's six directions mathematically. When we look at your universe, your experience here, there's six directions of space resting on a seventh point. So there's forward, reverse, up, down, left, and right. And this is three-dimensional mathematics. And those opposites come together to a central point, a resting point, an origin point. Well, if you understand that the genesis of the creation of the universe is talking about the genetics and genesis of the human being, the universe of the human being, then you realize that that allegory of God doing his work in 6 days and resting on the seventh is talking about the creation of you. And so therefore, it's like, what is the Holy Bible? It's talking about what else do you think it's talking about? You know, it's talking about the divinity of man, about how God lives through man.
Right.
So, you know, that's one thing that you can kind of talk about to really just start to open that occult book up.
Well, man, I got to let you go sometime. I do love talking to you. Obviously, we've been lied to in many areas. I like entertaining that to its furthest extreme, and I respect you for putting yourself out there for it. Before we go, remind the people where they can get more Marty.
MartyLeeds33.com is the website, main website, and then MartyLeeds33 on YouTube. And then I'm also on Facebook, you know, friend me there, post stuff all the time. So that's cool. And what's coming up? Like I said, I got a book coming up. I'm going to hopefully record another record this year. So that's coming up. And then after the book is done, I'm planning on doing another lecture series and kind of starting from the ground floor again and just kind of, working through all this stuff again. So.
Right on. And also, you mentioned this earlier, and I pushed out myself, but you are speaking at the Lightning in a Bottle Festival, right?
Yes, I'm speaking this Sunday with people like Charles Eisenstein, who's going to be there, Prince EA, who's like a hip-hop artist. There's a bunch of people that are going to be there. That should be pretty cool. So looking forward to that.
I
think the tickets are sold out. So if you're there, looking forward to seeing you. Otherwise, another time.
For sure. And one other thing I forgot to throw out there that I got to throw out is when I went to Armenia with Graham Hancock, we took a picture by a stone that had a pyramid that's supposedly a buried pyramid, looks like a hill, but they think it's a buried pyramid out there. But they found a stone that looks like the pyramid that might be under the dirt, and there's some leaves around it. And it was you who looked at that picture on Facebook and found that when you take the steps of that pyramid, it was broken up into levels, and you take the leaves around it, it encoded pi, and only you were gonna find that, man. And I thought it was pretty fascinating. I told Graham, he thought it was interesting, but I just wanted to give you props because you do a lot of great work in that number decoding realm, and that was just more icing on the cake.
Thanks, man. Yeah, when I saw that, I immediately picked that up, and I was like, oh, yeah. I was like, I figured you would get it, so that's cool.
Yeah, the freaking internet, man. Here we got researchers in Armenia that have been there for a long time looking at these things. They got the stone. They never mentioned that. You know, Marty Leeds figures it out, but
or not, you know.
Yeah, well, keep doing what you do, man. I do enjoy it. Look me up when you're in the neighborhood and take care out there.
All right, thanks, man.
You got it. There it is, guys. The great Marty Leeds. I love that guy. And as soon as I saw his Flat Earth doc go up, I knew we were probably going to talk about it here. It's a good video for sure for those who have any interest in this kind of stuff. Obviously, I had a lot of Flat Earth questions prepared, but as we went on, I tried to flex around to other areas because I don't want to pigeonhole Marty into this being his only topic. And I got the vibe that he's trying to be cautious about that too, and he should. He's done a lot of great gematria work decoding the cipher and seeing just how many areas it applies to, as well as pi and the natural codes of reality. You don't want your whole identity reduced to, oh, he's a flat earth guy, you know, and I don't want to contribute to that happening to him, so it's a fine line. But allow me to speculate a bit on this overreaching topic and take it to a darker place, because imagine any simulated environment, there's going to be patterns in the code. Things like pi and the Fibonacci sequence make total sense if there is a quote-unquote creator, but we use that term almost exclusively in a positive sense, and that's a slippery slope to me, because any gamer knows Banjo-Kazooie and Dead Space are both video game worlds, both contain evidence of a creator of higher intelligence, and patterns in the structure. You could spend a lot of time appreciating the elegance and sublime patterns that make up these equally perfect and complete worlds, but world-building genius doesn't really have many implications for a creator's morality, does it? Because believe me, the Dead Space and Banjo-Kazooie worlds are very different places to be. So to judge a creator's morality, I suppose you have to look at the experience in the simulation, and we live in a world where love is no guarantee, but pain and death surely are. Say what you will about being a vegetarian and not eating God's creatures, but they'll sure as fuck eat you. Without human intervention, almost any animal on this planet would die slowly as the plaything in the jaws of something larger. With human intervention, they're locked in zoo cages where their natural desires are crushed under the weight of our fondness for seeing every animal when we choose to wander past and snap a few pictures. Or even worse, if we're talking about one of the random animals we've marked for consumption, well, welcome to the slaughterhouse. It just begs the question, is our reality a perfect happy place birthed from the mind of a just and loving God? Or will you die if you can't find water in 24 hours, or for some reason find yourself in 10 hours of the New Mexico desert sun? Is this really a paradise, or is it more of a terrarium of terror we've luckily beaten to submission so we can live out our lives? We do have ourselves to thank for building shelters and tweaking our environment so it doesn't seem that hostile. But when I look at the framework of the world built around us, try living in it for a week without the cushy comforts we've added to the game. When I look at areas of the planet that don't have these cushy amenities, like parts of Africa, that's where I see the environment as the creator intended. And it's not great. A lot of bloated babies slowly dying in the hot sun. Or take it to the Amazon. Sure, they seem happy, but that's because they're constantly tripping out on ayahuasca, setting their consciousness as far away from here as they can, requiring a constant reminder that this is just a dream. Otherwise, they'd go nuts. Of course, I'm kind of joking and just playing devil's advocate for the counterpoints here, and I'm not trying to make light of people in horrible situations, just pointing out the reality, trying to redefine this paradise in more realistic terms. If you disagree, go live in the natural world for a bit. Have you even seen Naked and Afraid? They know the game ends in 21 days and half of them still can't make it through. But if I were to use the material world as the basis for understanding the personality of the creator, I'd say he's chaotic neutral at best. Which is fine by me. Obviously, it's not all bad. I did just get engaged this weekend, but if you haven't seen the Book of Mormon, that's basically its whole premise. Simple-minded Mormons on a mission to Uganda, telling impoverished people under the thumb of brutal warlords about the loving embrace of Jesus. You know, yeah, maybe bring them food or supplies for a hospital instead of a box of Bibles. But I've gotten pretty far away from any real point here, but I do hope that you liked this episode overall, regardless of how you feel about the flat earth. I do think we should have a little self-awareness about our aggressive emotional knee-jerk reactions to something as unoffensive as someone considering a different shape of the earth, you know? Because honestly, I have more in common with a flat earther than I do someone who stands in line for hours just to give Hillary Clinton a standing ovation, right? And there's a lot of them out there. I'd rather hang out with someone who takes their analysis of deception a little too far rather than someone who doesn't see it at all. And we can find a lot of common ground around the manipulation of the education system and the scientific quarantine and the lies of NASA. I actually think some of the satellite material is their best stuff. We're told tens of thousands of satellites are up there. Their designs haven't really advanced in decades. If you do some Google searching, we have no real photos. They never seem to crash or fall to Earth. The International Space Station never hits any of them. It's compelling to think that that was all a lie. Although I've had listeners write me and say they work on satellites and track them every day, and I understand how someone like that would think I'm a fucking idiot. But what are you really tracking? Are you seeing satellites with your own eyes, or are you tracking dots on a radar system? If I gave you a job watching an automated game of Pong on a screen and told you that that was something going on in space, and when you see a shooting star, you're getting a short glimpse of the ball going from one paddle to the other, you know, just because you see it on a screen doesn't mean it's a real thing. It's not going to be sufficient evidence. And you can get stuck in a cycle of confirmation bias and taking this to a place where no evidence is going to be good enough. I don't want to be like that, of course, but I don't know why people get so emotional about the stuff in this flat earth realm. And we alternative thinkers are already a small group. Why divide ourselves further? I get constant emails about how listeners love the general THC material and wish they had someone to talk about these things with in their regular life. So be nice to the flat earthers. They agree with everything you do up until a point, and that's better than nothing a lot of the times, right? Or you can join the THC subreddit, which could use some new posters. Or, if you want to go further, the THC Plus forums, where good things do seem to be happening. But I guess that's it. In the Plus show, we did talk about some great stuff. How the nearly universal disliking of math is part of the indoctrination design. Marty's thoughts on Neil deGrasse Tyson. We talked about the Arctic and Antarctic regions of the flat earth, one of my favorite areas to talk about in either paradigm. Marty talked about how the number 7 encodes the sun and the moon and why the government finds it necessary to withhold this information from school children. And we got into UFOs and alien abduction, which Marty doesn't talk about a whole lot, but we went there and speculated a bit about it and how that fits into a flat earth paradigm. And maybe these beings have been here longer than us and live under the ground. Fun stuff. This week is no exception. Sign up for Marty Leeds. Stay for the week after week after week of conspiracy goodness. So let me leave it there. Big thanks to Marty. Congrats to him for speaking at Lightning in a Bottle, where your humble host had slammed his door in the face of the universe and said, "I don't want your opportunity for new experiences and exciting life milestones. I'm too comfortable where it's safe." So be a better man than I, and I'll see you next week. June is going to kick ass for THC listeners. Sign up for Plus if you haven't. It's the air that I breathe, people. That's it for me this week. Your move, masters of manipulation and quarantiners of the composition conspiracy. Your fucking move. And here's a little tunage by Marty himself called Torture to take us home. I've been calling out your name, and the echoes all the same, and the plain I walk resounds with the sounds of you. I've been surfing, waxing rain, snapping pictures in a frame of all the memories I prefer to believe are true. It was cravings when you left, like a burnout cigarette. Left me ashes, bashed up, crashed out and confused. And like a song that never sets, Hey guys, thanks for listening to the first hour of the Higher Side Chats podcast with me, Greg Carlwood. If you don't know, there is a second hour to all the episodes we do around here. Generally, we're able to get a lot deeper into the topics and ideas that a guest is about, so if you enjoyed what you've heard from THC for free, consider signing up at thehiresidechatsplus.com to get the second hour of the five shows I put together each month. I never really wanted to be a paid subscriber podcast, but I really hate the idea of spending airtime promoting some product that's completely unrelated and telling you the best way to support the show is to buy an audiobook or new underwear by mail or something crazy like that. So instead, if you like the show, double your time with it for $5 a month and let's cut out all the other shit. It's half the price of a movie ticket and you get at least an extra 5 hours of show a month. Collectively, it keeps us stable and it frees me from wasting your time with anything but the show you came to listen to. It's really the only way for an independent, one-man show to make it, and I do what I can so that it's worth your while. Since we started this, I've always tried to use the subscriptions to improve the podcast and make signups more advantageous. It started with just a second hour for the main show, but now we've got a nice forum going where people can get deeper in conversation about the episodes with other listeners, submit a candidate in the guest request thread, or share their own personal projects to get out of the soul-crushing 9-to-5 cog-in-the-wheel life on the entrepreneurs thread. The forum and the plus comments are always the first places I try to go for listener engagement, but it does get harder as the show gets more popular. Because of that, there's also a direct messaging feature that you can use to reach me through the plus site also. But beyond the forum, if you like any of the music I've used for THC, most of it I've hired artists to make, and I provide it all as free downloads to Plus members too. So if you like a particular song you've heard close the show out recently, come get the MP3. I should also mention that if you don't like the idea of paying $5 recurring every month, I get that. You can buy 3 months, 6 months, or a year up front and just be done with it. I have plenty of listeners who send checks and money orders to the P.O. Box too. I try to make it as easy for people as I can, and you can read more about it on the sign-up page. Also, be sure to check out the FAQ help page on the Plus site if you have any questions or concerns about how to listen to a password-protected show on your devices. I've highlighted a lot of great solutions, and one of those would be the iPhone app that just recently hit the Apple App Store. A super kind and talented listener made it for us, and you can use it to stream or download either the free or the Plus show. If you're on Android, I'd use Pocket Casts or Podcast Addict and subscribe to the feed manually that way. I also try to throw in occasional bonus shows or Q&A shows, and I've got a few other weird ideas I might get to try out soon, but I give you all I can for $5, and I hope you'll at least give it a shot if you've listened to a few free shows and you find them unique or valuable. I know there's a lot of podcasts out there, and I'm just one of them. But if you have any questions, concerns, or comments about any of this, please get in touch with us at thehiresidechatsteam@gmail.com. I also wanted to plug the Higher Side newsletter I'm going to be putting out, totally free for anyone who wants to sign up at the main internet website for the show, thehiresidechats.com. You can also get on that email list through the Higher Side Chats Facebook page. There's a button there as well. But the reason I'm doing this is because I get tons and tons of emails after a show goes up asking me about how I feel about a particular guest or topic, and the wrap-up isn't always the best place to do that, especially if I have anything negative to say. Sometimes the dust needs to settle, sometimes I need to hear feedback from you guys first. There are a lot of factors, but I usually have something to communicate to you, and I just don't get to do it. So on the first of the month, I plan to send out a little newsletter with my thoughts about the five shows the previous month, and talk to you about anything else that's on my mind or that's going on. And what's probably most enticing is that I'm going to give you some insight into at least one guest I have coming up in the month, which people have been begging for some posted schedule for a long time. I personally think I'd like the surprise. But sign up for the Higher Side newsletter. It's free. It comes out on the first of the month, and I won't waste your time with any other emails. And that's it. I appreciate you listening. I try to give alternative ideas and guests a fair shake on a high-quality podcast, expose some deep-level conspiracies without the yelling, and I hope to offer some inspiration that even though the system relentlessly suggests you should follow their blueprint to mediocrity, you can do your own thing and live a much happier life despite all the negativity in the world. So go ahead and treat yourself. Isn't it about time?